Chief, mate, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Holy zombie Jesus!
Revolution without dancing is a revolution not worth having.
My calculations are correct.
Television is the explanation for this. You see this in bad television.
Swallow your soul! Swallow your soul!
This is cool.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
What was that? It was bad. It had nothing. No fire, no energy, no nothing. And it must pop, pop, pop! From 5 to 7, it must be green. Okay? Okay?
Save. Let's try this. There we go. Okay, we're good.
Oh, cool. Are we live?
Yes.
Okay, so we just bypassed the opening. Sweet. Okay, now that we're actually up and running, that... this is one of those days. Yeah. Well... Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Rabbits, rodents, demons. Who else knows what's out there listening to us? You happen to be listening to Finite Exposure on Jackalope Radio. And, yeah. Happy Martin Luther King Day for everyone out there. Forgot just... Ah, yes. Thank you, dead guy. We are live. Thank you.
I didn't even know that it was Martin Luther King Day until Mom told me there was no mail today.
I didn't realize it was Martin Luther King Day until about Friday night. So I was like, wow, this is going to be fun. So, today's agenda is going to be a little interesting. Well, that's, for lack of a better term, really interesting. Let's just kind of start off at the top here. Rendell's going to be going back and forth, because he's doing a few things, unfortunately. So, you've got me, Zahn Jubilation. First, okay. Rendell, you never played with the PS2, did you?
A little bit. I didn't play with it, or really even know about it, until I moved in with Angela, and we played a little bit of it, but yeah, it wasn't a major big thing.
But it was still fun. It was at least fun, right?
It was. A couple of times I got to play it, yeah.
Okay, and well, we all know it launched back in October 2000. Well, a decade and some change later, damn thing is still selling like hotcakes, and it's obscene.
Well, not really, because up until about 3 or 4 years ago, everything that came out for PS3 came out for PS2 too.
Yeah.
They were still supporting it with brand new games,
and they're still supporting it with brand new games, just not as much. But it's still amazing, The PS2 is one of is a relic of gaming at this point, which makes me really sad. And it's still selling like hotcakes. What is it? According to the official Sony Computer Entertainment release, the PS2 platform continues its sales momentum and remains robust in sales, especially emerging countries and regions such as Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and South America. And has exceeded 500,000 units worldwide. Yeah, that's pretty nuts. A decade-old console was sold as well as a brand-new PlayStation Vita. That's, Well, and given its affordable price tag and extensive game library, it's actually, pretty attractive. I mean, I still have my PlayStation 2. I love my PlayStation 2. Yeah.
Well, I noticed one thing of a similar nature when I lived in Montevideo. Montevideo had, and this is, I know this is where they came from, because when I went garage sale, this is where I got them. Montevideo had a lot of Mexican immigrants around the time when Nintendo and Super Nintendo were really going. And I was still buying tons of Atari 2600 stuff because that was what was popular down there. So they brought them up here, and the market went from Mexico to Montevideo. And you could, I mean, shit, even 94 or 95, I was buying, you know, four or five at a garage sale. So PS2 has taken over the Atari spot in just, it's, except Atari at that point wasn't being still supported, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't think PS2 will usually think, if PS2 goes the Atari model, and like you said, they're still in some way, shape, or form. I mean, last year, I'm sure there were a couple of games that came out on it. If they go as long as Atari 2600, well, let's just say there was one. If they go as long as Atari 2600 did, Atari 2600 stopped, I think, in like 86.
Yeah.
So if starting this year they didn't have anything come out and they followed that model, they'd still be actively found in 2021, which is not uncommon given the way that things have progressed.
Yeah.
Things that are like that are built to last a lot longer.
See, the PlayStation 2 is the console version, honestly, and this is how I view it, is kind of the console version of the Game Boy. Especially those Generation 2s. Oh my god. You could do all sorts of screwed up things to them, and they'd keep on ticking.
Couldn't you use them as a DVD player? Yep. I know you could use them as a CD player.
You could use them for DVDs, games, music. When they started putting in USB ports, you could do all sorts of crap then. So yeah, you know, they are really versatile, and they're still kicking arse. So we salute you, PS2, for surviving so long. Good God! that brings me up to this next article here. You know, we're just kind of throwing out a few games and tech things here, real quick, as I cough up a lung. Where was I? I just lost it. I coughed and I lost it.
I think you were going to talk about another game thing, so...
Well, yeah, there's kind of two of them here. Well, first off is, bollocks. Ah, here it is. Microsoft is shelving its fancy TV service for the Xbox 360, and I put that in the wrong article spot. There was a lot of buzz last year about Microsoft introducing a new TV subscription service for the 360. One that would bring all kinds of live TV shows to the platform and let, you know, them work with motion and voice control, which would be kind of funny. However, ultimately, because of, nothing, a report from a Reuters today reveals that Microsoft was at one point very serious about the service, but backed down and shelved it when it found out how much TV networks were going to charge for live feeds of their programming. Interestingly, while the initial reports only mentioned the Xbox 360, the report simply mentions Microsoft, implying the company had grander plans for its TV service than its just home consoles. Which is funny, given this next one, given the OnLive is partnering up with Google TV to deliver console-free gaming to your living room. With overpriced hardware and unfriendly user interfaces, Google TV didn't exactly set the world on fire when it launched last year. But a much-heralded 2.0 revision has brought Android apps and the better navigation to the service last year. Now, thanks to a partnership with OnLive, Users of the streaming Search Hybrid will be able to play AAA video games on their televisions without investing in new hardware. An announcement on Live said their viewer app will be available through Google TV, letting users chat while viewing clips of big release games like Assassin's Creed Revelations. The cloud gaming companies also saying that this is just a precursor to delivering a full gaming experience to Google TV users, just like they've done with tablets and smartphones with their updated OnLive app. Google's touting partnerships with big manufacturers like LG will have the search giant's Google TV 2.0 built into upcoming TVs. What this means is that with an OnLive membership and a Google TV compatible display, you'll be able to access the all the games in OnLive's category. Keep wanting to say online, OnLive. Yes, there we go. That means Batman Arkham City, NBA 2K12, and other big budget games on your TV without a 360 or a PS3. OnLive is making it harder and harder to write them off. They've done the tough work of building technology, proving it works, and securing content partnerships. All they need to do now is piggyback on other hardware and distribution services. Well, that and assemble a substantial subscriber base. Nevertheless, if I were shopping for a new TV, I'd be hard to pass up one that has internet functionality that Google TV is promising in OnLive's AAA gaming streaming. Oh, that's actually kind of interesting, you know. Somebody looked at I would almost say OnLive looked at what Microsoft was trying to do and said, we can do it better. And they took the spot and worked with Google to start producing it. So it could be really interesting. Especially with, who was it? Vizio, Sony, I think, is coming out with new TVs that are upgradable, much like computers, this year. They'll be internet ready and all sorts of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. What's some of your take on it?
Well, I will say this. If they one of the things that I hate about console games is the fact that it costs so goddamn much to get the consoles. Now, if they would come out and say, do like they want to do with this, where, okay, I can get this TV, and then doesn't matter if it's PS3 or Xbox, I can play it. Hell, I'd go for that, because that saves me. I mean, you know, if the TV costs $400, well, it costs about $700 just for the two consoles. So, it'd be certainly well worth it for them to be able, sooner rather than later, to find out how to do this. Because it's going to save a lot of people money.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm throwing out an update on something real quick here. I got a reminder. Anyway, yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm not too thrilled about the whole cloud gaming thing, because it's kind of I'm sketchy about cloud anything in general. Even though on one hand it's, you know, it's a evolutionary step for computers and gaming and all sorts of stuff. On the other hand, the security issues alone with it kind of make me twitchy, so I'm torn about it. Now, you know, cloud gaming, you know, where, you know, you don't have to have the console and all that fun stuff, that's nice. It means you don't have to every, you know, about 5 years have to buy a $700 console that eats up half your life, and you have to spend, yeah, like 9 weeks updating it. So, you know, it's, we've been keeping a good track on this. It's interesting what's going on in the, especially when you apply all of it together. So it's yeah. Ow. Hairball. Okay. Next up. Okay, and this one I found really, really cool. And it is a good question. Is Moore's Law violated? Has IBM gone too far? And this is all redundant questioning. And this particular notation is, you know, we all know there's, you know, 12 inches of foot, 12 months in a year, you know, and now, thanks to IBM, there are 12 atoms in a byte. Kind of makes playing, yeah, makes playing WoW with Martians a bit lax. Thanks, dead guy. The company says it's found a way to dramatically decrease the space it takes to store computer data, raising the possibility of huge increases in storage capacity and utterly shattering at least one variation of Moore's Law. According to IBM, its five-year project started by approaching the issue of data storage from a different perspective. At the moment, it takes something in the region of a million atoms to store one byte of data, either a zero or a one, if you know binary. Figures company is constantly trying to shave it down. Instead, IBM took a more fundamental approach, trying to figure out the lowest possible number of atoms that it could store data. The obvious starting point was using a single atom held in a in one of two states, but it turned out that any grouping of less than a dozen atoms was unreliable, as quantum effects meant data could be lost. Achieving this in practical terms also involved a shift in tactics. In standard storage devices, the atoms are arranged in a ferromagnetic manner, meaning they all spin in one direction. That has inherent limitations because you wind up with a magnetic field that causes more and more interference as the storage device becomes smaller. While the 12 atoms figure is somewhat arbitrary, in the final IBM experiment, it was able to stably store a bit of data by manually repositioning 8 of the atoms with a scanning tunneling microscope, roughly equivalent to a partial rotating a cue ball with Q-tip. This experiment used iron atoms on a copper nitrate surface, and it's possible other materials could work more efficiently. However, on the other hand, experiment was carried out at 1 degree Kelvin, about negative 300 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take, and the storage became unstable at 5 degrees Kelvin. The researchers believe it would take 100 to 150 atoms for the technique to work at room temperature. But still, that is up to 10,000 times fewer atoms than existing technology. IBM's Andreas Heinrich has noted that an incredible conservative estimate of being able to use 100 times fewer atoms in practice would make a 100 terabyte hard drive viable. There's been talks of Moore's Law being violated, which is slightly misleading. In its purest form, the law, quote-unquote, holds the number of transistors that can fit on a particular size of circuit will double every 2 years. That's largely proven accurate over the past 50 or so years. However, the concept has adapted to other elements of computing, including hard drive capacity.
The problem with that is I seriously doubt 50 years ago that they were thinking of working in such a micro scale. For the macro scale, yeah, that works. But we were going to have to get away from it at some point. So I think this is the point, if they continue on where they're going, that Moore's Law is now basically a relic. Because it just will be advancing far faster than that law can keep up.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about science, is it's been progressing at such a state for so long that a lot of these, you know, what some people are now calling archaic and, you know, set laws are proving to be, you know, fallacies. This is a perfect example of Moore's Law being kind of outdated. Because...
Oh, very, very outdated.
Well, so far it's held pretty well true, or at least variations thereof, of, you know, every 6 months to 2 years in that time period, data storage, computing power, you know, everything will double, which is very much true. It's just, at the time when the law was written, the law, quote-unquote, the capabilities and understanding they had then are drastically different compared to nowadays. So,
yeah. And one other thing, too, is Moore's Law is more commonly, I mean, it goes for everything, but how Moore's Law is honestly looked at is usually in consumer electronics. What is available for computer processing power to Joe Blow. There's a long time before this gets on the market for us. So yeah. Moore's Law will still be, I'd say, probably 10, 15 years before that's really readily available. So it's Moore's Law will still, although with, again, with technology advancing like it is, there are advances that I don't think Moore or anybody else could have foreseen. I think we'll pretty easily surpass that if we haven't already.
Yeah.
Just because we're getting to the threshold where
we won't be able
to go any faster until we get to this point, we get this technology. We aren't there yet.
We're starting to get to near the singularity point where the dividing line between technology and biology, ends, and sentience and programmability, merge and combine and change. We're getting closer to the singularity point. And once we actually achieve that moment, at any time in, scientific processing, the moment we hit that, the world is going to drastically change, and it's going to be exciting and terrifying. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be neat when it finally does hit for the commercial public. I just don't think that's going to be for quite a while.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of singularities real quick, I've got two here real quick that are kind of interesting. First off, Iapetus is finding a balance in both the light and the dark sides. Iapetus, one of Saturn's over 60 moons, has two faces. One side is bright white, almost like snow, and yet the other is a dark black. While no one really knows what the dark stuff is, however, close inspection has indicated the dark coating typically faces the moon's equator and is less than a meter thick. A leading hypothesis is the dark material is mostly dirt left over from relatively warm but dirty ice sublimates. The initial coating of dark material may have been effectively painted on by accretion of meteor-liberated debris from the other moons. This and other images from Cassianus's Iapetus flyby are being studied for greater clues. Now, what's really kind of funny is actually if you look at the picture, because they have a couple of them up there, one of them, it makes me laugh, is because it looks like a yin-yang symbol. It really does. It looks like a yin-yang. And it's and that's naturally occurring. So it's just like, hey, the universe, it's in balance.
Yep, and it's shown right here.
Yeah.
So that's that is funny. Rather interesting. I wonder why it took them so long to find that.
Who knows? And next thing is, and this one's kind of interesting. Earth has a telescope checking out black holes. There's no subtext in that at all. Given there's so much fascinating stuff happening in this particular field of science, how they are going to do this? Well, they're going to turn the Earth into a giant telescope. A team is connecting up to 50 radio telescopes scattered across the globe, including the submillimeter telescope on Mount Graham in Arizona, telescopes in Mauna Kea in Hawaii, and the combined array for research in millimeter wave astronomy, KARMA, in California. The global array will include several radio telescopes in Europe, a 10-meter dish at the South Pole, and potentially a 15-meter antenna atop a 15,000-foot peak in Mexico. In essence, what they are making is a virtual telescope with a mirror that's as big as the Earth. Each radio telescope they use can be thought of as a small silvered portion of a large mirror. With enough such silvered spots, one can start to make an image. The Event Horizon Telescope is not a first light project, where they can just flip on a switch and go from data to a lot of data. Every year, they are increasing its capabilities by adding more telescopes, gradually sharpening the image to see more of the black hole. It's a furometer, yeah.
So they are basically focusing all of these telescopes at one time.
They're turning Earth into a giant disco ball. That's what they're doing. They're going to turn the Earth into a giant disco ball.
Well, they say the 70s are coming back, so yeah, they might as well.
As long as disco does not revive, I'm happy. Happy. No disco.
You missed something. You missed something, didn't you?
No. No disco. No disco. I grew up with disco thanks to family. No disco. Ugh.
Oh, I didn't really get influenced much by that. And shit, I was born during disco, so that kind of surprises me.
Yeah. Two notes before we go to break. First off is Kim Jong-il. We all know he passed away last month, leaving his manga-reading gamer son, Kim Jong-un, as successor. Not much is known about Kim Jong-un, which means developers of Homefront had to insert his likeness later. One thing North Korean's neighbor, China, knows is that the dear successor totally looks like a Dragon Ball bad guy. There's an image going around, and it's unclear of its origin, as possible the image was made outside of China, outside of the country. A Kim Jong-un picture was altered to look like Dragon Ball's Android 19 of the Red Ribbon Army. While their appearances might look similar, the great successor cannot fire lasers from his eyes. Wow, okay, I don't think he can. Though the North Korean propaganda machine may beg to differ with me. Obviously, China and North Korea have a close political alliance, so there might be some good-natured ribbing in this. Or it could be the guy really looks like Android 19. The reaction online in Japan has been one of amusement, pointing out how the merciless comparison is. One commentator has been quoted as, "If this guy entered a cosplay contest, he'd come in first place." Nerd comparisons are not new to North Korean dictatorship. Kim Jong-il was also parodied a few years back with a Rocket Monster Gold illustration. And right before we head to break is... And this one's kind of interesting, is Capcom Bar serves brains in a pint full of Hadouken. On January 25th, Capcom, the game company behind Resident Evil and Street Fighter, will open a bar. It's called the Capcom Bar. Real clever. As previously posted on a few different sites, the bar will have booze and food, and will play host to Capcom promotional events. One thing you can expect is Monster Hunter meat, Ace Attorney seafood pasta, and Resident Evil brains. Not real brains, unfortunately, just cake shaped like brains. Capcom Bar is located on the first floor of Pasilla in Shinjuku. And on that note,
one other thing along that line that I found out, Boeing has come out with a Hello Kitty 747, and it's for a cervical cancer.
Oh, okay.
The proceeds of the flights or whatnot go to a cervical cancer, which I thought was really neat.
Okay, so. See, that, now that's cool. If it was just, you know, a Hello Kitty Boeing 747, I don't know what I'd say. Actually, I think I'd cry, personally. But since it's for a good cause, I'll let it slip by. I'll let it slip by this one time. All right, let's head to break, and then we'll come back, and we'll slam you with some more news.
Okay.
Every time I look at you, you
back over.
Okay.
And we're back, and we're talking about PC parts, so
yeah, well,
hard nuts.
Yeah, well, Rendell was talking about how he needs to update some a few things on his computer, and I happen to have a link to a nice happy site called PCPartPicker.com, and here's our plug for them for the day. And what it's basically like a Metacrawler search engine kind of thing. You know, you select your parts, and it, you know, you go bit by bit, and it will actually offer you the, you know, parts that are compatible with everything else you've selected. It shows you where you can get those parts online or in a store. And it does price comparisons for you. So you can sit and go...
You know, the one thing that I would like to have, and I'm surprised people don't do this, is go... Like, for me, I've got a Dell or a HP. Is, okay, so you own this computer. Here is everything that you can put into this computer.
A PC part picker can do something like that, basically.
Yeah. Oh, I just bookmarked them because when I get done with my rehearsal tonight, I'm gonna go look at that and I'm gonna compare with what I found with Newegg and Tiger Direct with what's on there and see if I can find something better. Because,
yeah,
like I told you, I need to upgrade my power, but my power is really the only thing I never have, so.
Yeah.
It's just a question of what do I need and how do I... Because when last time I put in a video card, it didn't need to be plugged in. It just went, plugged it in the AGP slot, and off it went. So.
Oh, that's nice. All right,
well,
so...
they got fans now, so they have to power that. That's where most of those cords are.
So first off, let's swing this out of the ballpark. Madame de Pompadour, ex-David Tennant girlfriend to become the new companion. Stephen Moffat on Twitter is not unlike how he is as a showrunner and writer. He likes to hint and drop clues, mislead fans, and generally drive us mad with unanswered questions. Moffat's a tricky man who revels in sending his fans on a wild goose chase. Things were no different last week when he tweeted this. Right, everybody who follows me, go and follow at Sophia Miles. Spin that fireplace now. I'll explain later, or not. If you recall, Sophia Miles played Madame de Pompadour in the Doctor Who episode, The Girl in the Fireplace, a Moffat-penned episode which easily became a fan favorite with its blend of humor and heartbreak. In response, Miles tweeted, "Watch this, fireplace, and the plot thickens." It does indeed. Now, such reputable sources such as the Daily Star are reporting Miles is likely to be the Doctor's next companion. And I'll say, I think she has a good chance. While it wouldn't be the first time an actress returned to Doctor Who as companion, obviously Catherine Tate played Donna in a Christmas episode before she joined the Doctor as a full-fledged companion. Both Rima Agyeman and Karen Gillan originally played minor characters before returning to join the Doctor as Martha and Amy. So it's highly likely. And it'd be good fun to see that actress come back, because she was rather quite good, especially as the role of Madame de Pompadour. So.
She was excellent in that. I would love... this is the romantic in me. I would love to see Madame de Pompadour. Since that's what they were trying to lead up to at that point. In that story was Madame de Pompadour was going to be traveling with him. He just Mister. So, I know it won't be, but that would honestly be neat for her to get in on that. So, yeah. Of course, if that happened, it would ruin what honestly was one of the best endings.
Yeah.
The ending of Girl in the Fireplace was one of the reasons it was so good.
Yeah. Alright, next up is... Okay, I actually don't have anything witty to say about this one. I, like some people out there, have come to terms with Lucasfilm's stupid and illogical decision to release the Star Wars saga in 3D beginning with the prequels. You know, it irritates me to no end, but guess what? Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, will be releasing in 3D February 10th, whether I go see it or not. So why not see the movie and enjoy the high points? Darth Maul and the Pod Race.
Oh, the pod race in 3D is going to be awesome. I just don't know if it's worth it because that would be the only thing I'd want to see.
Yeah. Now they are capitalizing on this. You know, if you go around online, you will notice some posters that are lingering here and there show off the pod race and promises how great it will be to watch in 3D. The other four feature Darth Maul and are completely badass to behold. He's a prominent figure on four of the five posters, and he's in the film for maybe 30 minutes. Now, don't get me wrong.
Well,
but the fact is that he is who they chose to feature most prominently. Proves he's not the only worthwhile character or scenario to come out of Episode 1. These posters are really much cooler than they deserve to be.
Well, I like Dora Singh, but she was in it for about 2 seconds, so...
Actually, as a dead guy, it's a Mad Wolf in disguise of a corpse today, he was asking us, how the hell are they doing a 3D version when it was filmed in 2D? What they're doing is a 3D conversion, much like most films are doing nowadays. And they insert the other D with CGI. You have to realize a lot of the pod racing and stuff like that was done with CGI, so all they have to do is go back over top of it, like the special missions, and fix the 3D that way. So, that's how they can do that. I weep on the inside.
I will say this like you. I think the pod race in 3D would be just awesome. But
yeah.
Other than that, I mean, it just I can think of more things in the original trilogy I'd like to see.
AT-ATs.
Than anything.
The giant
God, yeah. The AT-ATs on Hoth would be amazing.
Exactly.
The explosion of the Death Star, either Death Star, would be amazing in 3D.
Both Death Stars, back-to-back in 3D. It'd blow your mind!
One really good one from the original Star Wars would be the X-Fighter going down the tunnel.
Trench? Yeah.
Going to that would be really good. But again, that's Episode 4. I'm thinking back to Episode 2. The only other thing would be the droid battle. The planetary droid battle would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be the level of cool that the pod race would be.
For every cool thing that may or may not appear with the 3D update, there is one thing that ruins it all. Jar Jar Binks in 3D. And on that note, I'm moving right along to something a little odder.
Good luck.
Yeah. In this case, actually, since we're talking about Star Wars and whatnot, a less than a surprise, BioWare Big Star Mass Effect only on Origin. BioWare's community coordinator, Chris Priestley, has told Mass Effect fans that Commander Shepard's epic quest to save Earth from the Reapers will not take place on Steam due to a set of restrictive terms of service, which also lead to EA pulling titles like Crysis 2 and Dragon Age 2 from Steam last year. Quoted as saying, during the initial release of Mass Effect 3, it will only be available on Origin and have a number of third-party digital retailers, but not on Steam at this time. Steam has adopted a set of restrictive terms of service, which limit how developers interact with customers to deliver patches and other downloadable content. We are intent on providing Mass Effect to players with the best possible experience, no matter where they purchase or play the game. Better yet, he let it be known that Origin is required for any and all copies of Mass Effect 3 on PC in order to be activated, saying Origin is required for the PC versions of Mass Effect 3, both physical and digital. Mass Effect 3 will require a one-time single authorization for a single-player game. There is no limit to the number of installs, and playing Mass Effect 3 multiplayer will require a constant connection. He also assured users that Origin was not spyware. Origin is not spyware and does not use or install spyware on users' machines. In order to allow Origin to install games and their patches for everyone to use, Origin implements a permission change that results in Windows, not Origin, reviewing the file names in the program data /origin folder. This is an ordinary Windows function and not an information gathering process. So there you have it. Mass Effect 3 will only be available on Origin and a number of third-party digital retailers at launch. Furthermore, you need Origin no matter what in order to activate the game. Given how well EA and BioWare are really pushing Origin, because currently, no matter what a few people say, like the guys from Gamebreaker, to now order and purchase things like The Old Republic online through digital download and whatnot, you have to have Origin. For games like Crysis 2 and Dragon Age 2, you have to have Origin. They're basically pushing that crappy Steam knockoff, and Steam is not a good program to begin with, to sell their gear, and it's going to bite them in the arse. But on the other hand, Steam's functionality with many games, like, say, Blizzard, is non-existent, so both programs are rather shoddy and need serious updating. Personally, they both should be taken out back and shot for their own stupidity. That does actually remind me, I ran across an article before the show, and this one's kind of funny, and it does confirm something I did that I was thinking about and wondering about, is before release, actually, quite a few of the designers behind The Old Republic have noted that, yes, they did downgrade graphics for release. That the graphic quality compared to beta versus the release version is worse. And that is due to trying to make it more functional for less powered systems. The complaint actually came from initially many gamers who have high-end gaming systems, and were wondering what happened to the beautiful graphics. Well, there's your answer. They purposely downgraded it, and it still sucks. Mass Effect 3 does not make your PC open to hacking. Microsoft does it for them. Well, yeah, pretty much. We don't love our hackers. We're just saying, you know, whoa, you're talking about Microsoft and living hackers. Well, yeah. One note before we go on to our main event for today. Confirmed 16 episodes for Season 3 of Walking Dead. Walking Dead, which does come back for the second half of its season this year, starting next month, on, if I remember right, February 19th, either 19th or 11th, 19th or 12th, one or two, and has been confirmed for 16 episodes next year, so that's good fun. So, and, so more Walking Dead. More and more Walking Dead, yeah.
I just hope that they've gotten over that that cry when they fired the... didn't they fire, like, the creator or something?
No, the creator's still on it. The showrunner, Frank Darabont. He was the one that was fired. Since we are at the... an ultimate moment of the show for this week is, first off, we're going to knock this out of the bat, is the White House does not support SOPA or PIPA, Protect IP Act. Some of you were wondering when we'd get around to it. Well, we've gotten to it. This announcement actually came out, February 19th, 12th, chat room. First off, the White House is not supporting SOPA or PIPA, Protect IP Act in any way, shape, or form due to it restricting and harming innovation and free speech. An official news release that was given out this weekend. So, you know, that's a real exciting thing, but you also have to remember that the Obama administration and the White House did not support the NDAA, but that still passed because it was merged with the defense budget processing for this year. So... that's we're still looking at that, and that's, you know, one of those big dangers, you know, that, and that's one of those big dangers, and it's reached such a frenzied thing currently is PC Game is actually canceling its E3 appearance as SOPA protest, along with shutting down its beta for 24 hours. And it's not the first site, nor the first company that is doing something similar, but one in a growing line of sites and organizations joining together to protest SOPA. A few websites around the place have pledged to shut down this Wednesday, January 18th, in protest against the SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act, and that's all well and good. But now Red 5 Studios, the developers behind the upcoming Firefall, are doing it as well. Thing is, they're shutting down their video game, too. Firefall's beta will go offline for all of January 18th, as will the game's website. They'll be down for 24 hours, the outage simulating the effect SOPA could have on many websites of its past. Firefall CEO Mark Kern told Shack News, "We are extremely disappointed in this misguided legislation. We're also ashamed of the ESA for supporting a bill which is clearly not in the best interest of gamers, nor the game industry." The ESA is in a group of organizing E3, so as an added gesture, Kern later added, "I just had my staff cancel our E3 plans." So Firefall and the entire studio, Red 5 Studios, is taking a heavy stance, a stance that is likely to hurt them, but they are flat out saying no. They are just protesting to the highest possible way they can and saying no against SOPA and PIPA.
You do have to admire them. I just hope they don't get bit in the ass for it, but I do. I wish other things would. You know for a fact that Warcraft won't. I could see Tryon maybe doing it, but I don't think they're going to. But League of Legends might, or, you know, even if it isn't for all day, just say from this time to this time.
Well, actually,
hour or something.
Also, in recent news, more studios are against SOPA. You know, more and more game developers are voicing their displeasure with the Stop Online Piracy Act. You know, and we've heard from the likes of Epic Games, Riot Games, and, you know, and as just mentioned, Red 5 Studios. Well, also over the past week, Bungie has come out against SOPA and proclaimed that they all agree that SOPA sucks. Very well said, gents. They added that Bungie is opposed to any legislation that curtails free speech, stifles innovation, and prevents the open sharing of information on the internet. SOPA fits that bill. If it passes, it will hurt our community, the gaming community at large, and could very well cripple the kind of games we'd love to create and play. Again, very well said. Frozen Byte, the makers of critically acclaimed Trine series, who are silently protesting with an online video of one of their more famous characters from the series, Trine. So, that's quite a few people, you know, that's some interesting stuff right there. And here's kind of a knocking blow for the ESA, I've got to say, is the gaming industry spent as much as $190,000 last year pushing for Senate version of SOPA during the spring and summer. Many gamers and video game companies can't stand SOPA and its companion bill, the Protect IP Act. But the Entertainment Software Association, ESA, the lobbyists who stage E3 each year and defend gaming's freedom of speech rights, thinks PIPA is a good idea, and they're paying to support the legislation. Lobbying records for the second and third quarter of 2011 indicate that the ESA, which spends more than a million lobbying politicians about video games every 3 months, paid two firms a combined $190,000 to lobby about PIPA and other issues. Supporters say the bills would fight online piracy. Critics say that the bills, if passed, would stifle free speech online and disrupt the workings of the internet. The ESA has used two firms to try to convince politicians to shape the Protect IP Act. They paid the Smith Free Group $60,000 in April, between April 1st and June 30th, for discussions relating to online infringements of intellectual property, relating to Protect IP, as well as for lobbying for non-PIPA and SOPA causes. The same group also paid $50,000 in the summer for a similar array of causes, which also include education, energy, and tax policy as it related to the gaming industry. The ESA paid the Franklin Square Group $40,000 in the spring and another $40,000 in the summer to lobby for a batch of causes, including the immigration of highly skilled workers and for PIPA. The filings don't indicate what position the ESA's people took on PIPA, but the gaming group has made it clear in recent weeks that they support the legislation. and the records don't take into account any lobbying about PIPA or SOPA that was done in the winter. Those records should be filed in the coming days. Before we actually start, I found a site called SOPASTrike.com. It's a very interesting site that is where you can go to sign up for the January 18th blackout, of which we are participating.
I was saying that Jackalope should sign up not for blackout, because I know what a lot of them are doing.
Yeah.
Is they are putting up a cover page saying, this is SOPA, this is why we're against it, click here for more information. And I think it'd be good for Jackalope, especially with this many hit. What I'd do is I'd put it up on the front page and I'd put it up in front of the archive page, especially with as many hits as they get on the archive page.
Yeah.
And just say, and I mean, you don't need to say click here to get out of it, just say click next to continue.
Yeah.
You don't need to have it, just like, here's our stance. Okay, you read it. Thanks for reading.
Yeah. And that is
if you want to do anything, click around.
Yeah. And that is SOPASTrike.com. They do have a list of confirmed participants on the site. Reddit, Mozilla, Wikipedia, WordPress, Cheeseburger Fail Blog.
That actually covers a lot of sites.
Free Software Foundation, Red 5, Destructoid, RageMaker, Good Old Games, The Leaky Wiki, XDA Developers, Mojang, This Is Why I'm Pro, CakeRex, Vanilla Forums, STFUConservatives.net, LittleApps.org, Tuco's, and there's a list of sites that's not filtered but are participating, and I have signed us up on it, and it is well over 200 websites, and there's people from Facebook on it, Tumblr, tons of websites all over. All protesting SOPA and PIPA, because these are dangerous pieces of legislation. Okay, goatsy.info is probably a little too much to see. Blogspot.com. It is remarkable how many people and how many sites are rallying against this. Penis Insufficient Politician Association, or Protect Individual Pornography Access. Very nice, dead guy. Very nice. I'm still not 100%.
You're not 100%, and I'm busy all day today. We're really a good couple.
Yeah, so... pass it around, honestly. Given I'm kind of webmastering the website, I'm trying to keep that as up to date as I can and this and that. I'm working on a page to replace our main page for it in protest. January 18th, it's time to show Congress and the Senate that screw them. That is not in the best interest of people. It's not in the best interest of anyone. I mean, 23,000 people have, taken the Stop SOPA badge. There's, you can go about it on Twitter at hash blackout SOPA or hash, where is it? As this, damn thing takes a while to load. Hash SOPA strike. So. Yeah. You're one of the 99%. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Also in the recognition of besides SOPA and PIPA, given as Martin Luther King Day, as I can talk, we are having a short show today. We're only running an hour. So for some people who are expecting more, it's not today. Because with things like Protect IP and Stop Online Piracy, we wouldn't be around. a lot of sites, a lot of the shows on Jackalope, a lot of internet streams, a lot of gaming things won't be around. So we're acknowledging the day of a man who stood up and died for equality and equal rights and, you know, all that fun stuff. Not just, you know, and it wasn't just for black people, it was for everyone. Even if the internet wasn't around at the time, the message is still the same. And because with the SOPA and PIPA in place, we'd be gone. That'd be it for us. You know, so we're cutting it short today. And, you know, it's been fun today.
We got through a lot more today than I thought we would.
Yeah, do keep an eyeball out. We'll have a kind of a accessory, you know, sideshow kind of act that'll pop up probably later on this week. And we'll continue, actually. It'll be the second half of this show, but it's we're doing the protest of SOPA first. And then, you know, it's back to normal. So, you know, with that in mind, have a good Martin Luther King Day. Remember Wednesday? Oh shit! I almost forgot something. I almost bad me bad. Also to go with a kind of a game thing. Tomorrow, January 17th, Star Trek Online goes free to play. So check that out. And that's what's been eating up some of my time for the last week. So check out Star Trek.
If it's free to play, I may have to check that out.
Yep. Goes free to play tomorrow, and happy Martin Luther King Day, everyone. And remember, January 18th, protest SOPA, blackout the internet. And Rendell, what are we exiting out on today?
Oh, I'm just gonna. I didn't even come up with. Okay, I think I got one. I think.
Okay.
Hold on a minute. Yeah, we'll play this.
Okay.
We're not going to play our exit. I'll play this. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. So, you know, it's been a fun hour this week. I'm going to make sure I pass a couple messages around the Jackalope folks to make sure they understand the dangers of SOPA. And hopefully we'll see some protesting from the rest of the Jackalope family. And, like I said, keep an eyeball out for our second half of the show later on this week. Our sideshow act. And, yeah, we'll see you all next week. Have a good week.
I was born way back in 1986. I'm an old man now, but I remember how it used to be. And now my grandchildren ask me, "Granddad," they say, "can you tell us what it was like in the days of the internet? You know, before SOPA." And I tell them, "When was that? Let me see, sometime back in the early 21st century. I remember when the internet was free. Behind my keyboard, people let me be. See, there used to be a thing called freedom of speech. We had freedom to teach each other, freedom to preach, freedom to share culture and circulate ideas without the state trying to interfere, interfere. We lost that freedom, not freedom as in free beer, but the freedom to be free from fear. Even here in the United Kingdom, the fact that I'm from England isn't a matter that matters to our new masters and kings. I was a chap who could sing and distribute my music, and like-minded citizens could listen to it. I couldn't afford an orchestra, I was a poor performer in more ways than one. So I sought an alternate formula, reinterpreted the media around me, satirized the leader's lies on found beats, talk shop on top of a sample of a rock band. At least we used to, until rap got banned at the SOPA, SOPA Cabana. The place where SOPA, SOPA can ban ya. We're at the SOPA, SOPA Cabana. The place where SOPA, SOPA can ban ya. You didn't have to act twisted to get your ass blacklisted. Just annoy a big business and get fisted. They had a vested interest in Congress. If one messed with them, then there'd be one less. Our representatives never represented shit, so the internet was history. This was the end of it. I remember it like it was yesterday. I guess that day I was too lazy to investigate the escapades of another state's government. Now I'm left to pay because the covenant that they signed that day and ratified in law sits our mouths.
girl back